Hello everyone, I am the Crazy Sports Dude, and welcome to episode 4 of The Hard Count, a college football podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about many things, including just touching up on some things last week that I forgot to mention, involving Vern Lundquist and the Ole Miss scandal, the possibility of an ACC network we'll be talking about, and a main story tonight, the Big 12 meetings, along with some other topics that we will mention later in the show. But let's get just started with our first topic, and that will be what we missed last week with Vern Lundquist and the Ole Miss scandal. So last week, I was kind of in a rush. It was my last week of school. The podcast only lasts like 15 minutes. And I didn't really get to talk about in detail everything I wanted to talk about. So I'm going to go through it now. I'm just going to go through Vern Lundquist's... First, I'm going to go through the Ole Miss scandal, and then touch up on Vern Lundquist, the Jim Grobe hirings, and a little bit about the satellite camps, things that Jim Harbaugh has been talking about over pretty much the past month. But for starters, in the Ole Miss scandals, the football program was in 13 of the 28 violations that the NCAA found about Ole Miss. And Ole Miss said that there was, like, no surprises in the reports, and nothing has changed, really. So, Hugh Freeze was not explicitly named in any of these. It was more, like, serious failure to monitor charges. And so that's also going along with the thing that happened on draft night, of course. Laramie Tunsil's picture that was posted on his Twitter that was hacked, and his Instagram, which was also hacked, and the one on Instagram being the more serious one, where it seems that Ole Miss had been giving impermissible benefits to its student athletes. So the main issue was that Laramie Tunsil, in addition, like I said, I don't think this report includes the stuff that was found on draft night, but he spent a night at an Ole Miss assistant coach house, which is technically illegal for, not illegal, but against NCAA rules, because you can't give student athletes things, because that, technically, you'd normally have to pay for that. It doesn't seem like a big deal. He also, apparently, this is all Tunsil, by the way, he also, like, rode in cars with agents and stuff, but the three main programs that were in this investigation were the football team, the women's basketball team, and the track and field team. So this doesn't seem to be a huge problem for Ole Miss. I think they're going to lose some scholarships probably, but I don't see a postseason ban. So women's basketball did get a postseason ban, but I don't see football getting a postseason ban, and the most likely scenario would be losing like maybe 10 scholarships over the next 2 or 3 years. But on to our next topic, which is going to be Vern Lundquist. So I just wanted to reflect a lot on what he's done for the broadcasting business. Of course, if you haven't heard, this year will be his final year as a broadcaster for CBS, and I have great memories of him from the 3:30 games on CBS every... 3:30 Eastern Time games on CBS every Saturday. And in recent years, those have been the biggest games every week. So he was always, never not necessarily the number one guy, but he was always there in the moment. And he made it feel like a moment. He didn't try and take the moment. He kind of let the moment happen and guide you. He wasn't trying to overpower it with his commentary, like the miracle at Jordan-Hare, and then a week later, the kick six at Auburn, of course, that crazy Hail Mary that they hit, and then the returning a field goal for a touchdown to win the game against Alabama in their final game of the season. He called those games, but when you think about those moments, you don't think about Vern Lundquist. He definitely had some great commentary then, but he wasn't trying to steal the spotlight. Like, he could have obviously, he knew it was going to be a big moment in history when it happened. And he could have just tried and said something that he knew would be played over and over again and try to steal the spotlight for himself, but he didn't. He let the moments happen, and he was always the type of guy that you felt like he was just someone sitting down in your basement with you just watching football. He didn't seem like this crazy figure that was, like, trying to take over the spotlight. He was just an insightful guy that knew a lot about football, and he cared about football. And I think he did a great job, and I'm looking forward to this final year that he has. So now, here's why I think that Jim Grobe was a great hire for Baylor. First off, he's a great person. He's not going to have any tolerance for mistakes like Art Briles did. And he's a very good ethics. But in terms of football coach, he's a lot better than people remember him. They remember him as the Wake Forest coach that didn't really... He was Wake Forest. Like, he's never going to get anywhere with Wake Forest. But he coached Wake Forest for a while. He coached them from 2001 to 2013. And in those years that he coached them, he brought Wake Forest football to an 11-3 season in 2006, 9-4 in 2007, 8-5 in 2008. Three straight years where they were consistently one of the best teams in the ACC. They actually won the ACC in 2006 and went on to actually lose the Orange Bowl by 1 point. But Wake Forest was never going to be a team that was going to win a national championship. In fact, Jim Grobe was a lot better than Wake Forest football in general. Wake Forest all-time is 432 wins, 633 losses, which is about 40% winning. When Jim Grobe was coaching there, he had about a 50% win ratio. And although he did struggle towards the end, for the majority of... After his first 2 years, he was coach from 2001 to 2013, but from his fifth year to, like, his eighth year, they lost, like, 4 games a year. So, towards the middle of his run, he actually did really well. They made a bowl game 4 or 5 times with him as the coach, and they qualified for a bowl game. One time where they actually didn't get invited to a bowl game. He went 6-5 in his first year, but were not invited to a bowl game. And he went 3-2 in those bowl games. One of the losses was in the Orange Bowl. And they finished number 17 in the Coaches Bowl that year. So, I think he also coached at Ohio for 5 years. Not Ohio State, Ohio. And he had a 500 winning percentage there. But the two coaches before him had, like, a 12% winning percentage at Ohio. And those were at two universities that don't really have a history of winning football games. And now he's going to be at Baylor. He's got the pieces to work with. It's not really going to be the atmosphere that he would like. But he's got the people and the players there that they can have a good team. He's just got to focus them on the task at hand, and that's winning football games. So as you know, Jim Harbaugh is known for satellite camps. I think they have like 40. There's one in American Samoa, Australia, as well as 30-some in the U.S. But something that I thought was kind of funny is when he was in these satellite camps, he's always wearing something. So June 7th, which is Tuesday, he went to the one in South Alabama, Mobile, Alabama, and he was wearing a Julio Jones Atlanta Falcons jersey the day before when he was in Baltimore. He was wearing a Cal Ripken Orioles jersey and a Ray Lewis Ravens jersey. When he was in Norfolk, Virginia at Old Dominion, he was wearing an Allen Iverson jersey. So seems like he's trying to pander to these kids. It's not really a crazy story, but I just thought it was kind of funny that I just thought would be interesting to talk about. And so, yeah, Jim Harbaugh has all these satellite camps set up, and there's been a lot of controversy on whether or not these were really good for football. And on that, I'm going to have to wait and see, because this is kind of the first year that we've really seen them. So, we'll see, but I think it's good that a lot of kids are getting to see these, and Jim Harbaugh is visiting these, and I guess it's good, very good for Michigan recruiting. But we'll wait and see if it's good for the sport in general. So rumors have been swirling as if, one, the ACC will go to 9 games. They had agreed to go to 9 games in 2012, but after Notre Dame half-joined, they scrapped that. But they said that, this is a quote from a newspaper writer that was at the ACC meetings recently, and he said, "Indeed, 9 games are quite possible if, as expected, the ACC and ESPN agree by year's end to broaden the league's exposure through traditional and progressive means." So what he means by that is, like, an ACC network, like an actual channel. Like, you know, you can turn to the Big Ten network and the SEC network. And the ACC wants to stay in the front of that and try and keep up with the rest of the Power 5 conferences. And there was a sort of a project that was going on between the ACC and the ESPN to try and get an ACC network recently, but it got postponed. But I do think an ACC network would be good, especially for me, as I live in the ACC area, and I feel like a lot of people would watch that. There is sort of a pseudo-ACC network right now called Raycom Sports, and if you're in the ACC area, they will get kind of like a local ACC game every week on like NBC or CBS. No, I think it's NBC, but they call it Raycom Sports. So I think it would be good for the entire country to get exposure to ACC, and with Clemson going to the national championship last year, I think it's about time that the entire nation gets to focus on the ACC, and this will definitely bring in more revenue for all the schools. So both UCLA and Auburn announced contract extensions for their coaches on Tuesday. Auburn and coach Gus Malzahn came to terms on a deal through 2020, and Jim Mora and UCLA came to terms to an agreement to 2021. So both these coaches already had deals through 2019. These are just extensions. So Jim Mora got a two-year extension. I guess Malzahn got a one-year extension. And Jim Mora has been actually a very good coach recently for UCLA. That's kind of fallen under the radar. I don't want to say UCLA's fallen under the radar. They're just not as good as they normally are. But they've beat a lot of ranked teams. And they finished second in the Pac-12 South multiple times. They were 8-5 last year, but have had a lot of injuries last year. So I think it's as good for UCLA. Now on the other side, with Auburn, I don't exactly know if this was the best choice. He's going to make like $4.75 million each year. And I just don't know if Gus Malzahn is the way Auburn wants to go for four more years. Not that he's necessarily a bad coach, but Malzahn is... I just don't know if he's the type of guy that will be coach of Auburn for a long, long time. Auburn has kind of slumped recently. Okay, so Auburn was in the college football title picture for... Not the college football title. I guess at the time, the BCS national championship picture for a few years. But last year, they went 7-6. 2014, they went, I think... 8-5 maybe, with I guess Malzahn and Malzahn's first year, they went 12-2. Obviously, that was their big year, where they lost in the BCS national championship game in the final year of that. So at least it's not Gene Chizik, but so Auburn has improved from the year before Malzahn was coach. They went 3-9. And so now they've been winning 8 games a year for the past 2 seasons. They went 7-6 last year, 8-5 the year before, as I said. But Auburn, if they want to be on a level to compete with Alabama and Ole Miss, I don't know if you want to put all your eggs in one basket in terms of a contract. Like, I think you should take it at a time. Right now, I would have left his contract at 2019. And if they win 8 games again next year, then increase the contract. I just don't feel good about any coach unless you're consistently a top 25 team being extended for 4 or more years. Like I said, Jim Mora, I like it because he's been a coach that's been improving UCLA. Malzahn, although he's definitely a good coach, probably top 20 coach in the country, I would wait because the last 2 years they haven't been a top 25 team. I think 2014 they were like bottom of the top 25 probably, but last year they certainly weren't. So I would wait one more year, see if he gets them 8 wins again, and if he does, then you pull the trigger on the contract extension. I would have done it over the offseason. So on to a more somber story. Mississippi State defensive lineman Jeffrey Simmons, who's their top recruit, got suspended for what was actually a really disgusting act. He hit a woman that was on the ground and he was pummeling her. It was actually a really scary video. I'm sure you can find it online. I just Googled it and it popped up. And it's actually a really bad video. It's not just like, he was just pummeling her on the ground. So Mississippi State obviously suspending him for the entire season, or at least 6 games, right? No, they suspended him for 1 game, and it was against South Alabama, one of the worst teams in Division I football. That's not acceptable. It's a game you know you're going to win. So, obviously, they suspended him for that game. And the safety of people have to come first before winning football games. What do you think Mississippi State had to learn? Just literally a week or two ago at Baylor, these awful things that happened. And then they do this? Like, this is the worst possible time to do something like this. And just completely ignore everything. This is basically nothing. I feel like people would be less upset if they didn't even punish him at all, because this is just so meaningless. Like, it's like, I don't know, it's so meaningless, and the punishment, that it would be better off if there was no punishment. And honestly, it's like, anyone can see right through that they're just suspending him for this game, because they know it's going to be an easy win. There's been a lot of backlash throughout media, so I don't know if they're going to change it. I would doubt it, but there's been so much backlash, I wouldn't rule it out. But on to our last topic, review of the wildly eventful Big 12 meeting. So the Big 12 passed a rule allowing Baker Mayfield to get an extra year of eligibility because Texas Tech wouldn't let him transfer, and he was a walk-on. It's a strange rule, but they changed it, and so now he's going to get an extra year of eligibility. And just like 30 minutes after they announced this rule, he was tweeting at a recruit for 2017. It's supposed to be his last year, but instead he's going to get an extra year of eligibility next year. And I think that's overall good. Everyone can agree on that. The thing that Texas Tech did on making him not be able to transfer as a walk-on was technically within the rules. Everybody knew it was kind of wrong, and I'm glad the Big 12 agreed with that and changed the rule. And so now Baker Mayfield, who came in fourth place in the Heisman voting last year, he is going to get an extra year of eligibility, and that's good for college football because he's a fantastic player. Next up, another news from the Big 12 meetings. They didn't say anything about expansion, but they did say there's not going to be a Big 12 network. So this does indirectly impact expansion, though. This seems to rule out teams like Central Florida and South Florida who were putting in their pitches, but now it seems a lot less likely because their main draw was the expanded TV market for the Big 12 network, is that they can stretch to Florida and it's a new recruiting base. This does seem to favor more teams like Houston, who is not from outside, so the conference wouldn't see it as a draw in terms of a network. But it's just a good football team. So now they don't really need to have a team in a new TV market. Houston does seem to be up. Florida team's down in likelihood of the Big 12 expanding, although I don't see it expanding this year, possibly next year. But the same problem with Houston is the Big 12 already has like 3-4 teams from Texas. And I don't think they want to have another team from Texas, because that just depletes the amount of recruiting they can get done in Texas. So if Houston joins the conference, that's taking recruits away from Texas Tech, Texas, TCU, and even Oklahoma State, who tries to recruit in Texas a lot, and Oklahoma too. But so I feel like they would probably vote no on an expansion for Texas, for Houston, sorry. So right now, if you're thinking about Big 12 expansion, your most likely bet would be either Cincinnati or BYU, I think. Or probably both, actually, because they're going to expand to 12. And speaking of expansion, I meant to throw this in with the ACC Network bit, but I feel like Connecticut is probably on track to join the ACC with Notre Dame soon, because I feel like the thing about getting an ACC Network is that would mean, like, if the ACC got a network, that could mean that Notre Dame has more of an incentive to join as a football program, because they'd be making way more money than they could do with their deal with CBS. So let's say they join the conference, then they would need to add another team, and that sets up Connecticut or Cincinnati, which just adds another dynamic into this Big 12 expansion talk, is if another spot is opening up in the ACC pretty soon. And of course, the big one, the Big 12, is having a championship game. This was voted on during the Big 12 meetings. And I feel like a lot of schools just saw this as a way to get an extra $3 million every year, bringing in $30 million for the conference. They get $2 or $3 million of that revenue per team. First off, it increases the revenue of Big 12 teams. But second off, definitely. There's been a big debate. Does this actually really help you in terms of the college football playoff? And yes, it does. So, just think about it in 2014, the first year of the college football playoff, we had three teams that were locks, and then we had Ohio State, who went on to become the champions, Baylor and TCU. And Baylor and TCU ended up being 5-6. And TCU was number three. Baylor was number five, I think, going into that week, maybe number four, and they ended up getting jumped by Ohio State because of the fact that they didn't play a championship game. Ohio State destroyed Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game, and TCU and Baylor both dropped a few spots because they just didn't play. If they played again, I almost guarantee you Ohio State would have even made the playoff and would have a different champion. So, who knows if it would have been Alabama or Florida State or Oregon, which is one of three teams in, or if TCU or Baylor could have gotten the first championship game. That would have been a big deal for the Big 12. The first ever college football playoff winner is from our conference, guys. Instead, the Big 10 got that honor due a lot to the fact that they had a championship game. So overall, definitely good move in my opinion. I know there's a lot of different opinions on that, but you can sign off in the comments below if you agree or disagree on it. Whether it's a good thing to have a championship game. I will admit that there are some cases where having a championship game has hurt a conference. Like, let's say this didn't happen, but let's say last year Big 12 had a conference championship game and it was Oklahoma and they lost. Then the Big 12 wouldn't have a team where they would. So it just depends. If you've got two top five, six teams, then a conference championship game would be good. If it's a top five team against a top 15 team, you've got pretty much everything to lose, because if the top 15 team wins, they're not making the playoff, and the top five team is making the playoff. So it's there's cases where it would help the conference, there's cases where it hurt it. And also someone, I forget who, but they mentioned that there's a very good shot at five team divisions, and then it wouldn't just be the best two teams play, but it would be two division play, and that would be a good way to make it so that it's not just a rematch. You can't have Oklahoma State in Bedlam, and then a week later the Big 12 title game. That wouldn't really work. It would be better to get your cross-division games in at the beginning of the year, then your in-division games, and then the champions of each division would play each other in a championship game in a matchup that we haven't seen since October, and in December a lot of things would have changed, and then it wouldn't necessarily be a rematch, but kind of a whole new game. So I feel like that would be good for the Big 12 also. Thanks for listening, guys. Follow me on Twitter at CrazySportDude. It's like Crazy Sports Dude without the S. And make sure to tune in next week. We've got lots of content coming out. I'm starting my college football preview now that I'm out of school. Thanks for listening, guys. And I will see you in the next video/article. Bye. Next time.